This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. A Missouri jury recently ordered Johnson & Johnson to pay $72 million US to the family of Jacqueline Fox, whose death by ovarian cancer was linked to her daily use of the company's talcum products. 3 years earlier, researchers at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston unsuccessfully called for warning labels on talcum powder. This is after publishing the results of their research showing that the risk of ovarian cancer was one-third higher among women who regularly powdered their genitals with talc. A few thoughts may be running through your head. Why are women powdering their genitals? What is the vagina supposed to smell like? What's normal? What's not? To get the lowdown on that today, Dr. Pramitha Damodaran, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, is joining me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's start with this then. Why would somebody be using talcum in that area, in their genitals?
Well, I suppose to make it smell very nice. And I think something that we need to realize is that we all have our own smells and we need to be comfortable with all that. We don't have to make our body smelling sweet, at every, you know, every part of our body smelling sweet, because the normal smells that we emit is actually a healthy smell. Similar with the vagina. The vagina has its own smell. And once we know what is normal for us, then we can then pick out what is abnormal. Now, many women would want to keep that, they feel that that area is moist. And one of the things that talc does, it's also a drying agent. So it keeps that area constantly dry. And that might be one of the reasons why it has been over, you know, a period of time used as a drying agent in the vagina. And by the way, it makes you smell nice. So why not? But what we have come to realize is, even from the time that I was in medical school, we knew that there was this causal link between talc and ovarian cancer, but nothing that became more substantiated as it went along. But now more and more we find that maybe that link is a little bit more pronounced. But looking at all these women and doing a bit of literature search now, the women that now have come forth are a little bit different. And I think we need to then look at their lifestyle and how they have been using talc over the years. Now, a lot of these women have been using talc daily for more than 30 years in that particular area. And what I've come to understand is, in America, a lot of women actually use talc on the sanitary pad, on the tampon, they use it with the condom, they use it with the diaphragm before inserting it in as a contraceptive device. So in that sense, you're going to have more and more talc that gets right into the vaginal cavity. And maybe, again, I don't believe that talc is the sole reason why one gets cancer, but maybe that added on to other factors then has led that woman to get ovarian cancer.
Is this a cultural thing, or is this something, because, you know, I think a lot of our hygiene habits, generally speaking, gets passed down. It's something that your parents tell you, okay, this is how you take care of yourself.
It comes from birth, right? I mean, we powder all the babies, you know, the genitalia, just to keep it dry, because you're going to cover them up with diapers and nappies and things like that. So it starts actually at that time. But most of us sort of forget about it when the child reaches about 3 or 4, and it's too tedious a job to do, you know, we just forget about it. But some might just carry on.
There was also an indication that the talc had inflamed the ovaries. How does that work?
Well, again, this is a big question mark. Now, when they found that, you know, talc could possibly be linked with ovarian cancer, they actually looked at the specimen of the cancer cells and they found talc there. But there was no hard evidence that talc caused the cancer. All right. So again, these are gray areas that we really need to look into in a little bit more detail. But any foreign body would cause an inflammatory reaction. So while that inflammatory reaction then led on to cancer, it's a bit difficult to say Okay, so again, this is an area that we all would have to pay a lot more attention in the future. But suffice to say, don't talk too much down there.
Would you say we should stop?
I think that we need to look after our own personal hygiene and understand our body a little bit better. Because we've all come to this space in life that we're always in a hurry. All right? Everything has to be done very fast. And we forget looking after ourselves. Because, you know, we need to keep our own personal hygiene good. We need to eat properly, drink lots of water to keep ourselves hydrated. No tight clothes for a long period of use, because we all tend to use a lot of tight clothes, tight underwear. And all this doesn't allow the vagina to breathe. And then you get sweat accumulation, and then you get all these funny infections and smells. And I think that's the area that we really have to look into. So instead of just going and using a shortcut of a talc or a cream or perfume down there, we should then look at other areas that we need to improve to make it much better.
When you were performing an examination, you know, because I think you would be best placed to tell us.
Yes, that's true.
when you're performing an examination, what abnormalities are you looking out for? Because again, I think there is this idea that we don't have a general sense sometimes of what is considered normal.
True.
As you say, we're looking for perfect, or we're looking for clean or whatever, but we don't necessarily know what it's just meant to be if you left it.
Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of women are actually coming up now to find out whether this is normal. And I think that's great, because once you know that it's normal, a lot of fears just go away. All right. Now, when we are looking down there, gross as it might seem, it basically we're just looking at normal structures. There is a variation in normal structures. No two people are the same. And all that we want is structures that look right. All right. So basically we're looking at the fact that the whole vulval area, we're looking at the mons pubis, that's just the area just above the clitoris. Then we have the two folds. And these folds are very important because they protect what's inside, which is the urethra, where the urine comes from, and the vagina just behind there. And then at the bottom would be the anus. So this is what we are looking at. So we're looking at the fact that, you know, they look all right. Sometimes we get the labial lips, one being larger than the other, no big deal. Sometimes we get one being darker than the other, no big deal again. Now, we also have women who have delivered. And when they go through a delivery, sometimes the whole area gets a little bit skewed because of scarring after delivery. Again, very, very normal. So these things, at one glance, we can tell you and say, you know, you fall within the normal limits. Everything is okay. Don't worry about it. But when we read books and we see movies and things like that, we are expecting perfection. That means the shape must be that oval shape. We're expecting that the lips of the vagina both must be beautifully shaped. It's not like that with everyone. And, you know, to be very honest, one shouldn't get worried about it, because everyone is different. It's just like breasts. We have two breasts, but, you know, each one is different from the other.
Sisters, not twins.
Yes, absolutely correct.
And the other thing people worry about is the smell. Earlier you talked about how we should just get used to the fact that our bodies have smells, and they are healthy smells, and we don't all have to smell like perfume.
Yes, true.
What is the vagina supposed to smell like? What's normal?
Normal? Well, again, everybody is different. Now, what we would expect a woman to learn is what is natural for her. Now, we must understand that certain parts of the month, you're going to have different smells. So like, for example, you've just finished a period. There might be still a little bit of blood, and you get a bit of a metallic smell that comes along, after which most of it goes away. And some would, just before the periods come in, some even say that it smells a little bit more sweeter. Now, we are what we eat. So, for example, we're going to have garlic and onion. It's going to smell. We have durians. It's going to smell. And also, if you take certain vitamins and the vitamins are colored, we're going to have yellow discharge and things like that. So we must understand that that's all normal. And that is because of what we have eaten or what part of the cycle that we are in. But what we are looking out for, and what I think every woman should learn along the way, is to look out for the abnormal smells, which means that you have a bit of a fishy smell. And that's one of the most commonest infections that we can get, something called bacterial vaginosis. Now, it's because of hormone changes in the vagina. So you get this fishy smell, which becomes more pronounced after sexual activity. So it can really smell like bad fish. Now, that's a real turnoff. And many would come in and they would tell you, doctor, it smells like fish. And you know it even before you examine them, that this is probably what you're going to get. Okay. Now, the other common infection is fungal infection. Fungal infection actually doesn't smell. You know, you can get a bit of a thick, curdy discharge, but there is no smell to it. Some smell a little bit sour. And again, this, you know, this is again, I would say some may appreciate it, some women may not. But there's another infection called trichomoniasis. Now, that is typically with a bit of a sourish smell. But I must admit that many don't pick that up. But the one that you may pick up is a bit of a, like a rotten, something really weird going on down there kind of smell, which is basically what we don't want you to have, like you've lost something inside the vagina. Now, of course, the lost tampon story. But, you know, there are some who actually deal with a lot of other sexual activities and do place things inside and forget about it. So when something is left inside there, now that over a period of time really smells, especially after about a week. The smell is rotten. Believe it, you know, everyone around you would smell it and you would definitely come and see a doctor for that. So this is what we're asking you to look out for. But otherwise, learn your body, know what the smells are and just go with the flow.
Would a urinary tract infection also result in any sort of odour?
No, not at all. Unless the urinary infection is actually caused a bit of dampness around that area and it gives you a bit of a musky smell. Or it smells like urine.
But otherwise, the things that we're looking out for are things that you would definitely go see a doctor for. They're very intrusive.
I mean, it is obvious enough. Who wouldn't go and see a doctor if there's a fishy smell down there? I mean, you would run and get an appointment.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Premitha Damodaran, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. We're talking about the vagina, what is normal and what's not. Up next, we're going to discuss more about discharge and hygiene. You are listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me, Dr. Premitha Damodaran, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. And we're talking about what's normal and what's not when it comes to the vagina. We've talked about the smell. Could you tell us about the microbial ecosystem of the vagina? You know, it's often described as sort of delicate ecosystem. Is it really?
I call it the policeman of the vagina. Well, it's got a fantastic guard at the vagina. And I think what we do actually destroys it and then we get all these infections. The vagina is all, there's always bacteria all over our body, similar at the vagina. The vagina is always kept at a very acidic level at about 4.5. That's because the lactobacillus, or the good bacteria, are all there protecting it and not allowing the other bad organisms from growing. Okay? But sometimes what happens is that we take antibiotics, you know, for a fever or a flu. And these antibiotics, even though meant well to clear the flu, does too good a job and takes away the lactobacillus. Then what happens is most of us then tend to get a fungal infection or candida that overgrow. And that's quite common with antibiotic therapy. So then you'd have to go and see the doctors again and get some antifungal treatment. Now, there are other things that also sort of disturb this lining. Any hormonal condition that we have, let's say we're going through a lot of hormonal imbalance during pregnancy, that lining, again, the lactobacillus goes a little bit crazy after delivery. But there are lots of other things that we do on a daily basis that actually destroys that lactobacillus. A lot of women tend to use a lot of washes, these so-called pH-sensitive washes, and they use it on a daily basis. Now, you feel really good because you're nice and clean and squeaky clean. I even got girls who use Dettol down there, and they just feel very good about it. But what it does, even though it makes you really clean at that time, is that it destroys that protection. It destroys that lactobacillus. And with time, it allows an overgrowth of any organism that's going to be there. So you don't have protection anymore. And sometimes these are things that you don't realize now, but over a period of time, 5 years, 6 years later, after continuous use, it becomes more apparent. Now, the thing is that it is very popular to use all these washes, but every one of us women are different. We are very, very different. It may suit some women, but it also does not suit other women. And we need to realize that you know, we need to find something that suits us better. And medically, we will tell you, the milder the soap, or maybe even no soap, non-medicated soap, is probably the best for the vagina, because you want to instill healthy vagina. You want to make sure that the lactobacillus actually grows. We even tell you, don't use hot water to clean, cool water. And that's actually the best. Washing the vagina frequently during the day, just with water, you know, and then just patting it dry. And that's more than enough. Don't have to use any douches, because again, douches would go in deeper into the vagina and actually flush a lot of stuff. And let's say that you do have an infection up there, douches can actually do more harm, because then it moves that infection from one area to another area, and that becomes even more dangerous.
And it's about, I guess, getting used to a different sensation, right? Because if you're used to being, you know, super dry, super, super squeaky clean, it might take you a while to adjust to not having these washes and so on.
Yeah, so sometimes I really have to educate girls who have come in with long-term chronic infections that, look, let go, because you need to let go. Because as we get older and older, our bodies are going to be subject to hormonal changes, and that itself is going to change the flora in the vagina. So if you start doing all these things now, it's just going to come on earlier, and you're going to be in big trouble later. It makes the whole skin of the vagina very papery dry, and it can cause burning, it can cause itching, and that can be quite distressing.
When we talk about hormonal levels, do we also need to think about the birth control pill and how that might affect the bacterial setup in the vagina?
Absolutely, because again, you know, when you go on the oral contraceptive, it has got estrogen and it has got progesterone. And for some, depending, because again, women are a bit more sensitive to certain products, it can also change the flora there. Some women actually complain about some dryness with the oral contraceptive pill. Libido is also much less, so everything sort of gets exaggerated. So we have this group of women who go through that. So again, knowing which pill works for you, because if you need to go on the pill, you know, learning about the pill and finding a suitable pill for you is always very important, or go on a totally different form of a contraception.
What is normal when it comes to discharge?
Normal discharge has got no smell and is usually without colour. But of course, like I said just now, if you take a lot of coloured vitamins, then that may give you a bit of colour in the discharge, which is actually quite normal. But normal discharge, all women have discharge. I mean, just like all women have vaginal smells, all women will have discharge. And the discharge, as I said, is that's got no colour, no smell, and it varies in amount throughout the cycle.
What is it exactly? What is being discharged?
Well, what is being discharged is all the secretions from the cells there. Now, we have the vaginal glands, which will produce fluid, because when you walk, the vaginal walls will scrape against each other. Then you're going to have problems. So you need to have a bit of a lubrication so that everything works well. So that's what happens with menopause. Everything dries up. And women who are so dry, they actually feel that dryness when they start walking.
That friction.
So you need this lubrication, because there are two parts that are sort of sliding over one another. And that's really very important, even for sexual activity and things like that. And that's what comes out. Plus, you have hormones. So especially at different parts of the cycle, you have different types of secretions that come out. And the most important secretion that we're always looking out for is at mid-cycle. What we have is the ovulation discharge, which is a bit more thicker, and it's got a bit of a springy effect. You can actually distend it a little bit more. So that's typical. And women who want to get pregnant, we tell them that's when you have sex, because that's a good time for you.
What happens if you see blood in your discharge?
Well, again, that blood may come from an infection, or it might be an inflammation around the cervix, something called cervicitis, or it might be a polyp, a little growth at the cervix, and as you have discharge, the polyp bleeds a little bit, and then it comes out as a discharge. So when you have a blood-stained discharge, worth going to see the gynecologist, because we would have to look down there to see what's causing that. It might be something very simple and not ominous at all, but always, you know, it's something important that you need to sort out.
Inflammation reminds me of something that I wanted to ask you. You know, earlier we were talking about talc and the possible link to ovarian cancer. And one of the things that were mentioned was that Jacqueline Fox, the lady in question, had probably had inflamed ovaries for quite some time. What does that feel like? Would I know if my ovaries are inflamed?
Not at all. And that's a problem with ovarian cancer, because ovarian cancer is always detected late. There's a lot of space around the ovaries, and you can have a cyst growing in the ovary and only know about it when it reaches something like 12 centimetres or 15 centimetres.
And it's going to rupture.
Or, you know, or sometimes you pick it up incidentally because you feel, what's wrong with the tummy is growing a bit bigger. Then you come in for a routine checkup. I've had huge cysts with girls who just thought that they were putting on weight, and they went to the gym and did all sorts of things and still not losing weight, and then they realised that there was something wrong. So the problem with the ovary is that you don't get symptoms until quite late. You don't get symptoms of pain. You may get symptoms of bloatedness, but they put it down to various other reasons. Sometimes you get a bit of pressure effect on the bladder, but otherwise you are symptomless until it's quite late. Similarly, she would not have known she had inflamed ovaries unless she had pain and she did go for a checkup.
So that's where the importance of routine checkups come
in. Absolutely. And that's why we always insist that one particular checkup is not enough. Because once we know what your baseline is, then we need to do at least once a year just to see, just if you're sexually active, to do a pap smear. We also at that time check for infections down there. To do an ultrasound, look at the uterus, ovaries. Then we pick up, if there's anything wrong, we pick it up early rather than leaving it too late.
Another reason why one might powder the genital area, or why you might be looking at doing washes more often for your comfort, is to prevent heat rash. How can that be prevented?
Keeping it dry. I think not wearing tight clothes. Of course, sometimes we are forced to, and you know, there's no choice about it, but getting out of that as quickly as possible. I think we should go back to using cotton underwears, because that's really the best. And personal hygiene, like many use panty liners, and we stay with that same panty liner the whole day, and that's really not good, because the panty liner is actually very close to the vulva, and it's supposed to absorb all the moisture that's coming out, but it's there, and it's drying up there, and it then may cause infections and things like that. So ideally, whether it's clean or not, we would advise anyone to change their panty liners or pads every 3 hours. And that is something that we need to instill.
Menstrual products are another thing. You mentioned pads there. How do different menstrual products affect the health of the vagina?
Which ones are you talking about?
So I guess the common ones, we talk about sanitary pads, tampons, but then now we've also got things like the menstrual cup.
Yep. Now, again, the menstrual cup, not many women in Malaysia are comfortable using it, okay? Now, again, keep going, keep emptying it, you know, changing it. Because you need to, whatever you do down there, I think the idea is to not allow too much of accumulation. And being conscious about it and telling yourself that, look, you need to wash with water, keep it clean, keep it dry, don't have to perfume it all the time, and trying not to allow a lot of blood or secretions be there for too long a time.
Another thing that comes up that makes me angry anyway is when I'm looking around the menstrual products aisle and I see all these products being marketed to not just to absorb odor, but to release. You know, yes. They say, don't worry about it. You know, what smells, we've talked about what's normal during most of the month, but in the 5 or 7 days when you're on your period, when you're menstruating, what's normal? I mean, people get so worried.
You get that metallic smell, which is the smell of blood, which is very normal. But if you have, you know, however good we are, we've all had our bad days where the pads have been left for a long period of time, you get a very funny smell if you've left your pad on for too long and the blood has been there for too long. Now, that's bad. So you don't want that. So that's the idea of changing your pads frequently, because you don't want it to have any bad smells that if left alone, you know that this one's going to get infected. Okay? That's basically why the menstrual products out there are selling, because many don't like that smell of that bad smell or the smell of blood. They just don't like, I know many girls who just doesn't like the smell of blood. And so using these pads gives them that assurance that, you know, yes, they're having their periods, but they're not smelling the blood at all, so it's okay.
Is it safe to have so much fragrance so close to your vagina?
No, it's not. Again, it's not advisable. And it's something like using the vaginal washers. For some, it's okay, but for some, it may not be okay. So you'll have to, you know, it just depends on the body.
Breast self-examinations are a common part of women's health. We're always told to do that. What about genital self-examinations? Would you recommend that?
No, I think it's important to know what it looks like, because, you know, when one suddenly looks at it at 25 or 30 and you might think, was this there last time or not? So I think it's important for women to know what their own genitalia looks like. Just like breast, you need to look at your breast and then you would know, okay, that's normal for you. So I think it's good for one to sort of know what baseline is all about, but you don't have to do it like monthly and things like that. But along the way, as the years go by, and then study it a little bit more. Sometimes husbands do the job for us, so that's quite okay. Childbirth definitely does change it. Aging process, of course, changes a lot of things. And so understanding what it was and what can happen, I think, matter a lot.
Also the reassurance of a doctor, I'm imagining, you know, who can tell you, look, this is fine.
This is normal.
So what happens during a checkup? Earlier you said yearly. Is that sort of a good baseline to start off with?
Yes, that's definitely a good baseline. Well, normally we would sit down, you know, talk to them about their periods, ask them whether what their vaginal health is like, any discharge, how about their periods, has there been any change, and other non-gynecological problems which can also, you know, relate to gynae. And then going in for most of us would do a breast examination, check the lower abdomen. And then if they're sexually active, do a pap smear. But in that process, just before that, look at the external genitalia. Just make sure that, you know, everything seems within normal. Doing the pap smear at the same time with a pap smear, it's not only for the cervix. We would look at the vaginal walls. We would look for any discharge. We would look at the cervix to see whether anything is wrong with the cervix, whether there's any growth there at the cervix. So we pick up a lot from the pap smear. It's just not only for cervical cancer. And then we would add on a vaginal examination. That means one hand on the lower part of the tummy and one hand into the vagina. We are actually rocking the cervix and the uterus to see what the shape of the uterus is like, whether it's stuck to anything, whether, you know, we can feel fibroids, cysts sometimes. And then end off by doing the ultrasound, which would then give us a visualization of the uterus and the ovaries. And we end there.
Is there any discomfort, you know, for people who might be going for the first time and might be a little bit worried, a little bit self-conscious? What would you have to say?
I think there's always going to be discomfort, but it's not painful. A lot of times girls come in and say, you know, I've heard horror stories about it, which I think it's very natural, because when one talks to one other person and the stories always come down and it's like, they spend sleepless nights before coming in for a gynae exam. But I guess that's natural. But then once it's over, this, I ask them, is it painful? They say, no, discomfort. I mean, let's face it, any plastic instrument that goes into the vagina, you're going to feel discomfort. It's a strange room, you're with a doctor. I mean, you know, all that adds on to that anxiety. But pain, no. There should not be any pain.
Finally, to close it off, if women would like to know more about the health of their vagina, if they have concerns, what would your advice be?
Well, I think, first of all, go and look at your vaginas and make sure that it's all okay. Go and see your own doctors and see what they feel about it. Or come for the BFM Health and Living Live 2016, which is just around the corner on the 2nd of April. I think one can learn a lot from there because I think a lot of health issues are being brought up there. This is a lifetime opportunity to learn everything in one day as such. I think there are lots of interesting topics, and what women need to understand is that understanding their own body goes a long way in making them feel better, because no one is perfect, and we need to know that we want to try and just make things a little bit better. A lot of times, a lot of our health is actually involved with future cancers, infertility. So why not we start early to look after ourselves? It becomes very important.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Premitha Damodaran, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, about the vagina, what is normal and what isn't. You've been listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.